The Alex Goldstein Property Show. Stray FM.
Welcome to 2017, and it promises to be a great year. And of course, welcome to the Alex Goldstein Property Show, the number one rated property show on Stray FM. We aim to solve all your property questions, queries, and quibbles with a show that's chock full of useful tips, tricks, and industry expert information. Now, if you need that property fix, then connect with the Alex Goldstein social media accounts to get the best property advice whenever you need it. In this month's show, we will be getting the inside track from Katrina Allen, a residential and commercial conveyancing solicitor with Winston Solicitors in Harrogate. We also discuss accompanied viewings and what's right there, plus property investment. We're brimming with amazing information as always, so we're straight on with it.
Property news with Alex Goldstein.
Stray FM.
This month, we're discussing property investment and when to invest. Now, believe you me, the time is now, believe it or not. The market overall, especially say in London, has actually come back, with London coming down sort of between 8 or 9% as a general rule. Interest rates have never been so low, and let's face it, they can't get much lower. As a result, borrowing money has never been so cheap. The Brexit decision has been made, the economy is looking fairly stable, and demand for rentals remains incredibly strong. Now, many people are asking, well, Alex, look, what happens if the market falls in the next couple of years? Well, remember that you need to look at the medium to long term now as an investment. Gone are the days of short-term flipping. If the market falters over 1 or 2 years, overall, look, it's not going to have a significant impact because you're looking at a longer time frame. Now, the all-important questions, where are you going to invest? Now, as I think of it, the key points to consider, a look towards the key northern cities. We're talking Leeds, Manchester, Liverpool and Sheffield, plus, of course, look at student accommodation. These have got relatively low capital outlays, but really can provide excellent yields. If you happen to be looking in London, compare where the Crossrail stations are, look at zones 3 to 6, plus, if you want to take a bit more risk on, look at East and the South East boroughs. They're higher risk, looking at, say, Peckham, Dagenham and Forest Hill. These are predicted to see very strong capital uplift in the next 3 to 5 years' time, but buy in now whilst they're slightly on the cheaper side. Also bear in mind, the key university cities, Durham, Bristol, Reading, York, Cambridge and Warwick, these are highly popular with investors too at the moment. As I see it, look, what doesn't change is that the UK is still seen as one of the safest places in the world to invest. Property is still proven to historically outperform any other investment over the medium to long term. Overall, always know the type of tenant who you are aiming at. As a generalisation, consideration should be given to buy a property with 2 bedrooms and 2 bathrooms. This gives you flexibility when renting, especially say through Airbnb, and if you decided to sell it, it's going to appeal to a wider audience. And finally, ideally secure some parking for the property. And look, if you don't use it or the tenant doesn't use it, you can rent it out separately and it provides another passive income stream.
The Property Hot Seat.
Stray FM.
Name.
Katrina Allen.
Business.
Winston Solicitors.
Time in property.
15 years.
It's great indeed to have Katrina Allen from Winston Solicitors here. Thank you for coming in, Katrina. Very exciting times indeed, I hear, on the grapevine. Tell me a bit more about it.
Yes, so we opened our Harrogate office on the 1st of December. There's myself and Mark Fagan are heading up the office for the time being. I do a residential property and commercial property. Mark is our property litigator. We also offer other services, which includes employment, wills and probate, and other litigation matters.
Wow, so it's almost the one-stop legal shop, dare
it
I
is,
use
a kind of is. It's very exciting. I must say, there's amazing coffee shops in Harrogate, yeah. So looking forward to it.
At the moment, what are the other offices you've got at the moment?
So we have our Street Lane office in Roundhay, which is where I have been based for the past 3 years, and we also have Leeds City Centre, so exciting times.
Expanding, one of the very few solicitors that are actually expanding at the moment. Great to hear. And tell me a bit more about your role within the company, because I think you're a bit more unusual than most on the property side.
I am. Well, I'm a property partner, but I do cover for residential and commercial, which is unusual, as most people just sit with one seat, but it is fun. It's a variation. I do tend to deal more with residential at the moment, just because I'm sure other property solicitors are finding the market's really buoyant, but I do commercial as well.
And when you say residential, is that on the conveyancing side?
It is.
And the same on the commercial side.
Yes.
And if there's a problem, that's where you've got your psychics.
Exactly.
Got you. I mean, a lot of people sort of say, well, what's the point of having a conveyancing solicitor? What is the actual point, dare I say, of them?
Property is very complex. There's lots of different elements to property. It's a must to have a professional assisting you and guiding you. If you're buying with a mortgage, in any event, you would have to have a property solicitor, because the bank would not lend without that expertise. People sometimes do have the opinion that conveyancing transactions can be simplistic, but I'm sure you've found, Alex, that that's a rarity.
Sadly, very rare.
So property solicitors will do things such as searches, which is local authority searches, water searches, environmental searches, which look at the property. We also have to make sure that we check the covenants on title. Now, covenants are restrictions on the property itself. So, for example, if you were buying a property that you wish to extend, we not only would need to check, say, a drainage report, which would show a potential sewer or drain pipe in the boundary, which may affect development. Mm. We'd also need to check whether or not there were any covenants which could restrict development. So it's always very, very important that you do instruct a property solicitor.
And how do you check these? What the sort of little gremlins? I mean, sometimes people talk about sort of historic footpaths that no one knew about. I'm guessing when you involve a conveyancing solicitor, they're able to sort of check all of that out for you.
Yeah, I mean, we check the documents that are passed to us. So, for example, if we were going to check regarding footpaths, the local authority search would be the first port of call. That would look for whether or not there are any public footpaths registered. Also at the moment, I'm noticing that there are more applications to register a public right. So we're seeing that now more on local authority searches. So that is something that's important. Sometimes your deeds will show a right of way. I've just acted recently for a client where they had a fishing right at the bottom of the garden. So, you know, things like this are important for your solicitor to be checking, because if you bought that blissfully unaware and then moved in and then it was alerted to you, then you might be a little bit unhappy.
Indeed. And then when you try, and then the consequences, I always say, is when you actually come to sell, you've then got that problem, and you've now got to sort of declare it.
Exactly.
In terms of the actual process of conveyancing, obviously, once you're instructed and a deal's been put together, you've sent out for all the searches, as you've said, and you get all the information back. What are the actual next steps? Because, again, I think a lot of people sort of overlook sort of the conveyancing process, and they just said, oh, well, we'll just get our solicitor to run it all. What actually happens behind the scenes once you've got those bits of information back?
Yeah, I mean, it is a complex process. So once a client instructs, we obviously submit searches with the client's authority. We try to do that at the start of the transaction. Behind the scenes, whilst we're waiting for the search results to be received, then we are raising inquiries with the other party solicitors. During that, then obviously we're getting replies in, working through the replies, checking obviously the covenants, reporting to the client on the covenants, raising queries with the actual client, because we need to check.
Indeed. Now, a bit of solicitor legal phrasing here. Sometimes you call it inquiries.
Yep.
People out front will probably call it questions, if you like, but it's effectively the same thing.
Yes, so we've got to raise questions with the other party solicitor on the title itself. When we receive search results, there may be questions we have to ask them. All this is happening behind the scenes.
And this is if something's not clear. So if one of the searches comes back, possibly, or you're thinking in your own professional mind, something's not quite right.
Exactly. I mean, you have the basic questions that you will always ask. I mean, I've never had a transaction where you don't ask a question. So there will always be the basic questions that you've got to ask as a starting point. And then, quite rightly, there'll be questions where you may be alerted to something in the form that the seller has completed. So there's been an extension. So we go on to ask the question, please supply planning and building regulations. Mm. There may be something that the seller is, for example, if you're purchasing a property, is highlighted, such as a dispute. We've then got to raise a further question. Yep. So there's always something behind the scenes that's happening. We may not always be sort of speaking to you every day about that question, but you will then be reported to further on with copies of those questions, because ultimately the client is your eyes, as it were, for the property. You know, we never see that property, so it's always important you keep your client in the loop, because they may say, oh, hang fire, you know, we've noticed that at the property, and the seller hasn't actually noted that in the
Should a purchaser of a property that you're acting for, they obviously, most of the time people do actually get a form of survey. Is it best that you have and see sight of that for those reasons, or nothing to do with
I always ask for a copy of a survey. I mean, I'm certainly not a professional surveyor, but there is always an element marked up for the legal representative, which we need to check. For us, you know, the survey and the client are our eyes for that property. So it's very, very important you have that communication with your client, so they can highlight to you points that you may need to raise, which ultimately will have impact if you didn't raise that as a question on a future sale.
Got you. So once you've gone through all those inquiries, you've sort of tested all the avenues, then it sort of comes on the most part, people have a mortgage, and you get, again, the sort of technical phrasing, I'm pulling down on the mortgage. Just talk everyone through, if you're getting a mortgage, how it actually works from a legal, from a solicitor's perspective, and there's banks and panels, and it all gets there. A lot of jargon involved.
Yeah, I mean, once the client has applied for the mortgage, the mortgage lender will check that the solicitor's actually on the mortgage lender's panel. We are, because of the number of partners, and we are on generally most of the panels. Once the valuation has been done, the mortgage offer will obviously come to the solicitor. In most cases, HSBC are a little bit different. They send it out before. For example, if we've got all searches, I've received all replies to the questions that I have raised, and I'm satisfied and mortgage offer is sat on file. Yep. At that point, then I would ask the client to attend the office for signature of papers, go through papers with the client, any questions. At that point, then, if we are ready, we would then say to the solicitor on the other side, we would like to discuss completion dates. Once that date has been agreed, we send off what's called a certificate of title to the mortgage provider. And that is us as the solicitor saying we are happy that there is a clear title that you can give lending to. And then we request drawdown of those funds.
Got you. So, yeah, the mortgage lender is putting
everything
back to you.
On the solicitor.
I've got you. So, you know, that, I guess, is that part of the reason why the whole process, you hear a lot of, I suppose, grumbles that the whole process takes a long time, especially at the moment. I suppose in the last sort of good sort of 3 to 5 years, sort of the length of time from going under offer through to exchange just seems to have got slightly longer. I don't know whether you feel the same with your experience, and I don't know how long it actually takes from your perspective.
I've been doing this job a long time. I mean, I do hear when people can quote that a property transaction will take 4 to 6 weeks. I think it's difficult. We always give a client an estimate. So if somebody was to say to me, it's a freehold purchase, what would you estimate? I would say around 6 to 8 weeks. You can never give a determined time, because each property transaction has its variables. It depends on the length of the chain. It depends on what questions you have to raise and what responses you're going to get. Yeah. If you raise questions and you get amazing responses back quickly, then that transaction ultimately is going to happen a lot faster than where you send off queries and it takes 4 weeks for somebody to respond.
And does that then make a difference? So say you're acting for a buyer, and obviously by the sounds of it, extremely efficient, but then on the other side, if the vendor, the house sellers, their solicitor isn't, I say, as proactive, again, that all sort of hinders the process.
Completely. And it's ultimately the variables. So, for example, if it takes longer for the other party's solicitor to get replies, that's going to have an impact because you're waiting. And then if you get a response that you don't like, it's ultimately you may have to go back and raise additional questions. And I think this is sometimes the issue we have. If a client is told, well, replies are in, it doesn't necessarily mean at that point I'm going to be ready. It might mean that, unfortunately, I have to go back and raise further questions. Again, it depends on the length of the local authority search. I mean, you have one local authority that can do them within 24 to 48 hours. You have another that's, at the moment, they're saying their lead time's 20 working days, but I would say it's another 2 weeks over that. So it's so many different variables. It's so difficult. As long as you chase on the transaction, that's about as much as you can do, because you can only put so much pressure on another party.
Quite.
But it's important, obviously, that it is chased during the transaction with the help of the estate agents.
Absolutely. And what actually happens? Because, again, I suppose it's a bit of a hot topic. Yes, it is very much so in the estate agency sector at the moment, but these sort of the the online disruptors, as they like to call themselves. You've got these sort of mass online conveyances. What intrinsically is, I suppose, the difference between one of the online guys and then obviously you guys in Leeds and Harrogate? People just instantly go, well, it's a hell of a lot cheaper. Why is that?
It's difficult to say because I certainly don't get quotations for online agencies and solicitors. I would always personally choose local because I like that relationship with a local solicitor. Generally, you're going to find with local solicitors, they're going to know local agents, local professionals, which ultimately, if you've got a problem, then you can pick up the telephone and say, look, I need your assistance. I need your guidance. I need you to push on this transaction. Can you assist? I've never used an online firm myself, so it's difficult to comment, but I personally think being able to step into the office of your solicitor, call in, 5-minute chat, or deal with everything in one meeting, drop paperwork off rather than you have to wait a week for it to be posted. All these things, I'm sure, will add to...
It's the little things that count, as they say.
Yes.
Absolutely. And if I'm a homeowner and I'm looking to sell, are there any things that I should look to get done in advance or prepare or things to be mindful of?
Most certainly. I mean, if you're selling a property, when it goes on the market, I wouldn't wait to speak to your solicitor once it's sold. You know, make contact with your local solicitor early on. They can then guide you as to what they would be required from you at the point that the property does sell. So, for example, your identification, proof of funds, things that you can take time in the background to collaborate, to pass on. Say, for example, you've had a recent gas safety check on your boiler. Your solicitor can say, get that paperwork together. If you've had an extension, make sure that all your paperwork for your building regulations and planning permission is all bundled in readiness to drop to your solicitor. Because ultimately, the more that they have at the start, the quicker your contract papers are going to go out.
Good little top tip there.
On a purchase transaction, again, speak to your solicitor early. You may have viewed a property, you might have not had that offer accepted, but at least, again, you can have the chat. I mean, so many clients just do the basic valuation, which is for bank purposes only. Until they instruct a solicitor, they may not think about a survey. So again, if you've spoken to a solicitor before you've potentially had an offer accepted, at least then you might think, oh, they've mentioned survey. You can have that discussion and make an informed decision early on. Then you're not obviously upsetting the vendor by asking for a survey 4 weeks down the line, which ultimately may give the vendor a little bit of they might be a little bit concerned by that. If you've done it early on, when you can do it, then...
Yeah, it's out the way and
done. Yeah, exactly.
Because I know you mentioned sort of extensions, and that tends to, well, certainly in my experience, tends to be a bit of an issue where people have overlooked, accidentally, of course, on some things when it comes to extending. From your perspective, what are the issues that you come up against or you would be mindful of from a legal perspective?
Yeah,
if I was extending my house, for example, what should I get done?
Yes, so, I mean, obviously you'd have to, if you're looking to extend, you'd obviously need to check with the local authority what you would need to do. So does it require planning permission or is it within permitted development? Does it require building regulations? It's so important to have that contact with the local authority. Because ultimately, when you come to sell, the solicitor acting for your buyer will raise that query. I mean, unfortunately, we do see it more often than not that when people do come to sell, we're asking for paperwork for that extension, and ultimately they don't have that to be able to offer.
What happens if you fall into, I say, that sort of circumstances where you don't have that paperwork for an extension? Is there a way around legitimately, do you solve something?
There's
like
different
that?
Variables. I mean, one of the first questions we've got to ask is, you know, when did the extension take place? We've got to give the client the choice as to which way they wish for us to move forward with the seller solicitor. So, for example, the best way forward would be for the person that owns the property to go back to the local authority, have retrospective consent, and they would issue what's called a regularisation certificate. But that would be ultimately only if the seller would be prepared to do so, because the moment you get the local authority to the property, you're putting the local authority on notice that you didn't have those permissions. So that would be the first conversation you'd have with your client. Now, ultimately, in conveyancing, everybody wants to meet the end result as quickly as possible. For us solicitors, we've got to make sure that end result is not going to cause a problem when you come to sell. So if the seller does not wish to go back to the local authority, most seller solicitors will then offer what's called an indemnity policy.
Yeah.
Now, that's fine. That obviously is something that we would agree to, but clients have got to be aware that an indemnity policy merely covers for council enforcement. It doesn't cover for structural defects as such. So it would be important for the client to make sure that they satisfy themselves on that point, because what you don't want to do is go, that's fine, we'll accept the indemnity, and then find there's a problem with your footings. You know, ultimately, that could pose a potential problem. What we also suggest to clients is they do check with their building's insurance company that they are satisfied, that they will still be prepared to offer insurance on the basis that we couldn't say whether or not that extension would need building regulations or planning permission. It's just ultimately very important that clients do think of the bigger picture when they are proceeding. I mean, people do proceed with indemnity as long as it's notified to the mortgage provider and they're happy and the client's happy. They've just got to be aware that it is partly at their own risk to accept that on the indemnity basis.
So if you haven't got that paperwork for that extension, you can get round it, but it's going to be quite a headache. And as you said, that is another reason why the whole process can take so much longer.
Yeah, I mean, I have seen recently we've been acting in three recent cases where the seller has agreed to go back to the local authority. I mean, this is in Leeds, and the local authority, I must say, have been brilliant, and they've gone out, and I think we've had the regularisation certificate within a week to 2 weeks from the other party solicitors. In one case, it was 48 hours. But that was just a question where building regulations was noted on the local authority search that just hadn't had the sign off for the completion certificate.
Got you.
So, you know, there are things that can be done. It's just ultimately, nobody should make an approach to the local authority without speaking to the solicitor. If anybody makes that approach without taking necessary advice from those professionals, then that can cause a major problem.
Because
if you make an approach to the local authority, it could potentially invalidate any indemnity insurance. So it's a must that people don't just think, oh, I'll just pick up the phone. Because the moment you do that, you could be causing yourself and the whole chain a problem.
It does happen more often than
unfortunately,
you think.
It does.
And I dare say, with the length of career that you've got, I dare say, surely you've got the odd amusing story for everyone.
Yeah, this this was a difficult question, because you have to be careful the information that I give without highlighting a client's case. But I do remember this was right at the start of my career. I was reporting to a client on covenants, and there was a covenant that you could not keep pigs or poultry. And the client actually said to me, but what about my pet pig?
Were we talking micro pig here? A
full-size pig. At first I thought she was, because obviously people have humour, but she was actually being quite genuine. She had a pet pig that lived partly in the house and partly in the garden.
This
was going to be a deal breaker for her. I mean, in the end, we did write to the local authority and they did refuse. it's one of those things that it was quite interesting, to be fair. I think she's the only person I've ever met with a pet pig in the house.
So best declare absolutely everything,
yes,
including if you have a pet pig.
Yeah, this is why it's so important when we write to clients and report on the covenants. It's so important that people do read those documents, because ultimately that one covenant could have impact on either your decision to purchase or future saleability. So,
and I'm assuming pig was absolutely fine and he moved in happily.
They didn't buy.
No.
Local authority wouldn't give consent.
It's the way it goes sometimes. Yeah. Way it goes. But great to have you on the show, Katrina, and thank you so much. If anyone wants to talk through their pet pig scenario, or if they're buying or selling a property, what are the best ways to get in touch with you? Obviously, at the new snazzy office.
Yes. So if you would like to pass through your pet pig stories to me or any questions on the legal process for buying or commercial property, if you can give me a ring on 01423 275 375, or drop me an email at kaa@winstonsolicitors.co.uk.
Fantastic stuff. Thanks so much again.
No, thank you for having me.
The Property Hospital, Stray FM.
The Property Hospital is all about me answering your property questions and concerns when it comes to your experiences in property. Now, this week, I'm actually answering a question from Helena, who's got this to say.
An estate agent has launched a property on the market that I really like, but I need to sell mine. I'm strongly considering instructing that same estate agent to sell my property so I can secure the one I want. What do you think?
Helena, please be careful. Instructing an estate agent in the sale of your own home just because they're handling the sale of another property that you would like to purchase is not actually the right way to go about it. Now, many think in this situation that it will mean yourself and the agent can sort of engineer a bit of a situation. so that they sell your home and then you get to buy this other property. But it's really not the case nowadays. Of course, the agent's going to love to sell your home. They're salespeople after all. However, your reasoning for choosing them isn't quite right. Now, remember, an agent is legally bound to report any offers or interest on a property right up until the point of exchange to that homeowner. Now, say, what would happen if a cash buyer liked the same property as you? The estate agent would have to report it to that vendor. That purchaser is in a much stronger position than yourself and would in all likelihood secure that property. The estate agent would not be allowed to hold back this cash buyer's offer just because he knew you were there too, albeit you'd certainly be noted as an interested party. It may be that this agent is the best option when it comes to selling your own home. However, when you instruct an agent to sell your home, you must base it on more than just the fact that they're selling this other property you'd like to buy. Consider accompanied viewings, marketing, editorial, additional office exposure, front of office staff, getting under offer to the exchange procedure, and the list really does go on. The idea of having some form of leverage over the agent or indeed the other homeowner really isn't the case nowadays due to the legal standards set within the estate agency sector. Once you've taken this element out of your thinking, the right answer and your reasoning for wishing to come onto the market will become clear. Do give me a call if you'd like to talk it through further.
Alex Goldstein's top tip.
When it comes to viewings, always try and get the estate agent to accompany potential purchasers around, especially first viewings. Buyers are going to be more open with them. They can discuss freely any works they'd wish to do to your home without offending you, and you will get a much more reliable viewing feedback. When it comes to second viewings, it's usually good to be there, albeit in the background. Let's face it, a buyer will want to meet you and see the whites of your eyes without being alarmist. Now, remember that they are investing, of course, in your home as a purchase, but they're also investing in you as an individual. If they meet you and you come across as an affable individual, then you're going to have cemented confidence in your abilities to perform as a seller. Now, getting to under offer, as I've always said, that's the easy bit. Getting under offer to exchange can be more problematic. However, if the homeowner and the seller get on well, then you're much more likely to resolve any issues that may crop up. That's the Alex Goldstein Property Show, and yet again crammed with top tips and features. If you need expert information, videos, and up-to-the-minute property news, then head over to my website, alexgoldstein.co.uk. The next episode is out in the first week of February, so make sure you tune in for that. Until next time,